A badge of honor. A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast powered by the OBBM Network. We are healing our heroes through our own personal journeys. I want to welcome my co-host and partner, Sam Horwitz. How you doing, Sam?
Hey, doing great today, John.
Oh, man, it was a whirlwind week this week, man. And I want to, if everybody can see our Chicago PD hat that I'm wearing proudly, because we got to spend the week with some wonderful law enforcement officers with the Chicago PD and the Metro PD over in Chicago on behalf of Brotherhood for the Fallen. Man, that was a great week, but we learned so much by just some conversations with some of the officers.
Yeah, it was, going into a city that we knew was plagued by the epidemic of suicide. I hate to say it, but Chicago seems to lead the way every year. And this year is no different. Understanding what they're up against, and just the FOP7, like you said, Brotherhood for the Fallen, just opening everything up, getting tactical with the folks that came out for our workshop, really having great discussions, diving in deep, providing strategies for them, and a new dialogue, because now as everybody that goes through our workshops understands, hey, once you're with us, you got a safety net that is with you, and it will always be there, and at a moment's notice you can reach out, and if it's not us, we get you connected.
I hate to get into the the politics of everything, but I noticed, and from what we're doing and going to these different workshops, I noticed that a lot of the post-traumatic stress, a lot of the stress that these officers are getting on the job, and the failed help, are mostly from these woke Democratic cities that are putting their law enforcement on the bottom of the pile. They're not backing their blue like they should be. So that adds extra stress onto these officers. There's a lot of policies within these communities. There's a lot of policies within these states that add extra stress onto our law enforcement. I see that being a big problem here in Chicago, which was great. We had a captain from Metro who was part of their peer support team, who really took an active role, but also told us about the walls that he hits at certain times when he tries to help his members. I was thinking about this a lot. I'm like, as a captain, you're really torn in a peer support network, because people are worried about how they open up to you. But he found a balance that really impressed me, and he's open and honest with his members, where he says, hey, listen, what you speak to me, I have to do. If it's, job related and it's violation, I have to act. And he puts that up front, and everybody respects that. It's not like he goes behind their back and says it, but he'll put it up front and say, hey, listen, if you want to talk to another peer support guy, I'll get him here for you. So I like the way they're running it internal. I just feel bad that they're hitting so many roadblocks within their own department and their own administration. And that's happening all over the country.
Yeah, well, I think, having a third party like us come in, and certainly our guest tonight, we talked about, we are a small piece of this giant puzzle. And the more pieces we can put into the mix, the better opportunities our men and women in law enforcement and first responders in general can reach out to. It gives them the ability to go outside the department, because inside your department, if you have a supportive captain like we met, that is great. But just like you said, at whatever point they're reaching, there may be something preventing true help, or, hey, if you tell me this, I'm going to have to report it. So it's like, okay, well, I heard about this organization, and I'm going to go over here. And then you're working outside of your organization and getting the help you need. And I think our guest today, through his podcast, he highlights so much of what is going on in the criminal justice system, the reform, everything. And so let's bring, without further ado, the host and creator of Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast, Patrick Fitzgibbons. Patrick is a veteran, and he also served front lines in as a police commander in Colorado. And Patrick, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Patrick. Thank you.
Hey, thank you both, John and Sam. It's an honor to be here.
You know, Patrick, I'm just going to jump right into this. You know, I'm not the smartest tool sharpest tool in the box, but you know what? I read through some of your website, man. It's really easy and very layman way to understand this. This is some wonderful work that you guys are doing with brain mapping and the brain stimulation. This is, I don't know if it's breakthrough medicine or breakthrough procedures, but you know, if this works, we can get most of our people off that PTSD medicine or PTSI medicine. We can get them all off the depression medication and stop, you know, chemically inducing their bodies with just re-stimulating their brain.
Yeah, well, it's one treatment modality that we have down there, John. And I went through it. We talked off air. I went through 18 sessions, and you know, it was the difference between night and day. And it's just not that one thing that we do down in Shatterproof. We do, you know, yoga, we do breath work, we do acupuncture, we you know, teach our patients how to eat right, you know, exercise, all those different things. But yes, the neurostimulation along with neurofeedback is very vital. We also do things like EMDR, RRT, things that are more mainstream. But we're learning more and more, not just where I work, but, you know, all over. We're learning more and more about the brain every day. And the reality is that we can heal the brain in most cases. And this is amazing technology that we use down there.
Now, it's not shock therapy.
No. I remember, and we were talking about this before we started. You know, I remember, you know, when I get down there and I'm in, you know, I go through starting treatment, and they said, well, we want to do this. You know, we want to, you know, see if you'd be interested in neurostimulation. And I was like, what the hell's that? I mean, you're going to be shocking my brain, or what? I was thinking of Jack Nicholson and, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and stuff, but it's not like that. So they, you know, they map your brain. Like I talked about before, they find those areas of the brain that are struggling, that are damaged. And then through subsequent treatment, they actually help repair those areas of the brain. And again, that's just one tool we use down there, coupled with all the other different treatment options that we do down there. It really is amazing.
Well, that is awesome. You know, let's back up just a second so people can understand how we arrived to talking about not shocking your brain and the good work that Shatterproof actually does. I mean, you served in our armed forces, and
absolutely,
then you took a path into to law enforcement. Just to, like, tell the viewers and our listeners about you.
Yeah, I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Army. He was a JAG officer, and for those who don't know what that is, he was a lawyer in the military, and he retired out of the military. He passed away a couple of years back, but he actually went into the Air Force at a time when it was easier to do that, so he retired as a colonel in the Air Force. And from a young child, I mean, I had friends and family that were Chicago PD, because my mom's side of the family is originally from Chicago, and I knew I wanted to be a cop, so you know, didn't go to college right away. Went into the military at the old age of 21. Kind of did some other things after high school. Went in the military, served with the 82nd Airborne down at Fort Bragg, jumping out of perfectly good aircraft. And then I knew I wanted to go into law enforcement. So when I got out of the military, I pursued my law enforcement career. I did 23 years in law enforcement, started on the street like everybody does, and worked my way up, and I retired as an operations commander, and I was in charge of all patrol and those things. So I had a great career, ups and downs, like you both know, but overall it was a great career.
And then how did you come to reach out yourself to Shatterproof and decide to start the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast?
Well, I started the podcast about seven and a half years ago. So I was still, you know, when I was on the job, I had the show. But the way I started working with Shatterproof is I was actually a patient there. And when I retired in 2019, I thought, you know, law enforcement's behind me. It's in my rearview mirror. I'm not going to think about it anymore. You know, my wife at the time, we were like, oh, let's just, you know, the future will travel and stuff like that, which we did. But the more time went on, Sam, the more I realized how much of my identity was wrapped up into being a cop. And I think a lot of officers, you know, a lot of first responders, you know, face this when they leave the job. I didn't realize how it would impact me. I was so excited to leave, but once I was out of it, I missed it and I lost my identity. So I started getting a little depressed, started having some marital problems. A family member attempted suicide. Didn't go through with it, but attempted it. And I just was in the tank. Then I went through a messy divorce, very painful divorce. And I find myself just severely depressed, isolating, you know, drinking a lot, and to a point where I got to a point where I wanted to kill myself. I was really close to doing it. I was praying and everything. I come from a Catholic, you know, Irish Catholic family. So I was praying. And I remember having a gun to my head one night, and I said, you know, there's got to be a better way. Those two angels on your shoulder, one angel on my shoulder saying, oh, you're a piece of, you know what, and you, lousy husband, you went through a divorce, and I'm calling my kids, you know, drunk and telling them I'm going to hurt myself. You know, you're a horrible father. But then the other angel was like, you know, you have a lot to live for. So I put the gun down, picked up the phone, and called my sister, my younger sister, I'm very close to, very close to all my siblings. And I said, I need help. You know, I'm going to hurt myself. So my sister raced over to the house. We talked, we cried. And I said, I need to check myself into a hospital. Now, I did my career in law enforcement in Colorado. I now live in Arizona. So my sister took me to a hospital locally in Denver. And we were driving there, and being a cop, being a former cop, I knew, okay, now it's starting to, you know, reality started to hit in. I'm like, I know what's going to happen. They're going to put me on a hold, and I'm just going to kind of BS my way through it, even though I was still in pain. And I get to the hospital. They check me in. You know, they have me in a little hospital smock, and I'm in this room, and psychologist comes in. She's talking to me, and she says, I think you ought to stay here. And I said, I'm not going to stay here. I knew what to say, you know, I knew how to get out of it. And I said, I'm going to leave, you know, and she urged me to stay. And I said, screw it, I'm leaving. My sister was so pissed off at me, but I was still in pain. So I knew through my network, through my show, that there was this place down in Florida. And so the next day I get up, I start making phone calls. I'm at rock bottom, you know, rock bottom. I know I need help. I'm just not going back to that hospital. So I start making calls, and within 48 hours, I'm down in Deerfield Beach, Florida, where Shatterproof is, among first responders. You know, all first responders are patients. Former first responders run the program. First responders are in the program. And I'm not just talking about cops. I'm talking about fire, EMS, corrections. And about halfway through the program, I said, you know what? I was getting some amazing treatment, and I said, I want to work here. I want to work here. I mean, I was happy. I was getting the help I needed. I got discharged. And then I started reaching out to people saying, I really want to be part of this program. I want to give back to the community that was so good to me over the years, because I don't have to tell you both and the listeners, that a lot of first responders out there are suffering. About 40% struggle with mental health issues, addiction, or both. That's the number we know about. So it's probably
right. I don't want to cut you off, Patrick, but I just want to go back to that phone call with your sister.
Yeah.
Okay. You said she raced over.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is where I feel a lot of our first responders struggle. And we heard this in Chicago with the EAP program. Someone reaches out for help, we'll get to you in 2 months. Yeah. Do you Do you think the secret, do you think the circumstances may have been different if your sister turned around and said, oh, I'll talk to you tomorrow?
Or absolutely.
I'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Of course it'd be different. You know, God knows what I would have done. But that's the closeness of my family and my siblings. And that's a great question too, John, because as a first responder, and I can't speak for other first responders, but I was very good at putting on a mask, you know?
Oh yeah.
I was very good at, you know, telling people, even though I lost tremendous amounts of weight, my diet, my food intake considered of alcohol. That was about it. Every once in a while I'd get some Grubhub or something. I was a recluse. I'd stay in the house, wouldn't leave. I had severe anxiety. But I put on this mask, you know, I didn't see my friends anymore. I basically was a shut in. And then when I did see my family members, it was fine. Everything's fine. You know, put on a fake smile. You know what FINE stands for? Freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. That's what FINE stands for.
Yeah, we use the R-rated version.
Well, I didn't know if I could say that, but.
Yeah.
So I put on a big mask, and I think a lot of first responders, again, just speaking from my point of view and the people I talk to, they try to fool people into thinking they're okay. And don't BS yourself. I mean, you might be able to fool people, but you got to be honest with yourself. I was
absolutely
at that point.
You know, we so much appreciate you being so open and telling your story. And I know that for the people listening and watching, you're having an impact, because I'm feeling it right there. We got to take our first break to say thank you to our sponsors. We will be right back with Patrick Fitzgibbons of CJ Evolution Podcast.
Thank you.
What is the role of American government anyway? Is the role of government to decide where I can go and where I can't? Is the role of government to work tirelessly to destroy vital infrastructure that keeps goods and services from my customers? Is the role of government to choose who can drive, fly, or ride according to mandated stipulations that threaten my body, health, mind, and conscience? Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice too. Your voice, your feet, your vote, not just at the ballot box, but training to be a poll watcher, precinct chair, judge, or early ballot counter, so you are doing all you can to protect the fairly counted American vote. Move freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move freely, America, because my voice
and my voice,
together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. MoveFreelyAmerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor with John and Sam and our guest, Patrick Fitzgibbons. I'm glad we had that commercial break because I was able to get another cup of coffee. That's my addiction. We're talking about, just before the show, when we're talking about different puzzle pieces and the ripple effect, I just want to give a big shout out to Tina Jackal. Who is on with us right now. She's another amazing woman out there.
Yeah, good friend of mine.
Yeah, Doc Tina.
Giving so much back. I see her in the comments section, giving so much back to the community as well, and helping heal our heroes from so many different areas. And, you know, I love the way we all come together and we all stick in this little network, because it really helps our 900,000 other law enforcement officers that do not have that support backing like you had your sister, and they know they can call Tina, they can call you, Pat, they can call me or Sam at any given time and say, hey, I need help.
Yeah, absolutely. Tina's a good friend of mine, and you know, we're all on the same team, right? And mental health and addiction and PTS, you know, it's so rampant among our first responder community that this is my mission. You know, if I get up every morning, brother, and if I can just help one person today, not necessarily getting treatment, but just starting to open up about, you know, problems that they're having. And that's the problem we have in law enforcement is kind of breaking that glass ceiling and saying, all right, it's okay for me to come forward and ask for help. I remember when I was in treatment, brother, and Sam, you too. I mean, I remember I was about 2 weeks in and a friend of mine, I didn't tell a lot of people what I was doing, where I was going. But I talked to a good friend of mine I used to work with as a cop. And I remember 2 weeks into it, he called me up and said, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And I was like, "I'm doing great. I feel great getting treatment." And he said, "Hey, look, there's some people that, you know, want to know what's going on with you. You know, how you're doing." He said, "Would you mind if I told them?" And I said, "Absolutely." I said, "I'm no longer afraid anymore. I'm not scared. You know, I'm putting my ego aside for the first time in a long time, and I don't care what people think. The one thing I learned in treatment is you have to be selfish with your self-care, not to the point where you're a narcissist or you're ignoring your family. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about being selfish for your self-care. What's best for you?"
Right.
You know, because there's people are always going to talk crap. I got to a point where I'm like, I don't care anymore. I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my kids. And so it's very hard to get to that point, but, you know, people can do it. You just got to take care of yourself. You know, you got to take care of yourself better.
You know, you had mentioned your kids a couple of times in your story. And I want to ask what, because we do a family workshop and the family serves right alongside you. A lot of people think, you know, oh, you know, I don't want to bring my job home. It's like you bring your job home because they know from seeing the bad accidents on social media, they know where you are every day. They also go through everything emotionally that you go through, whether you want to admit that or not, it's true. How did you come back to them when you're, well, first, did you get to talk to them while you were in treatment? And how did you kind of navigate that?
Absolutely. You know, first, I mean, I got to talk to them, not initially, because when I was in intake, before I got over to Shatterproof, they're going to take your electronics. And there's many reasons why they do that. They want to monitor you. They want to get you stable. But I didn't talk to my family. They knew where I was at. Obviously, my kids did. So I didn't talk with them for like 3 or 4 days. And for me, that was kind of liberating, not because I didn't want to talk to my kids or my family and friends, but because you don't have a cell phone now attached to you.
Yeah. Oops. We lost them. You know,
for better or worse, those cell phones.
He brings up.
Yep, we just lost. Lost.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
Sorry about that. No, so I was able to talk to my family, and my kids when I was in Shatterproof, and the first thing I did was apologize, and say I mentioned before when I started out. You know, I was calling my son. My daughter's 28. My son's 22, or he'll be 22. And I can't tell you how many times I called them up saying I'm just drunk and rambling on about wanting to hurt myself and crying. And I was in pain. But the first thing I did was apologize that I put them through that. Because, you know, when the roles are reversed, you know, I'm supposed to be the one encouraging them. And now they're the ones going, "Dad, please don't hurt yourself." So when I got into a better state of mind, I apologized to them and they accepted it. You know, they're my kids. I love them. They love me. So, it was a difficult time before I made the decision to seek help because I put
like
my,
sounds like you had a strong family to begin with, a strong backing to begin.
And
with.
I know a lot of first responders, you know, don't have that, you know, but there are people that care about you and there are people that love you and don't want you to do anything rash. And you have to remember that. I tell people that all the time. Well, you know, my parents are gone. I get it. I mean, my parents are no longer with me either, but you have people that care about you and love you,
right.
You know,
I was in Chateau Recovery up in Utah and I'll tell you, there are a lot of guys from Colorado up there with me. So I don't know what their peer support is over there or their mental programs are over there, but it was, I had firefighters and law enforcement over there from Colorado. But you brought up a good point. You weren't allowed to speak to the family for, I think I wasn't able to speak to my family for about 7 to 10 days.
Yeah.
But what, I don't know if Shatterproof does this, is my family was assigned their own personal psychologist who would keep them updated every single day.
Same down there. Yeah.
Same down there, right?
Yeah. So my therapist would call my brother and call my sisters. And give them updates. You know,
makes a world of difference.
Yeah, it's whoever's on that release of information,
right,
John? You know that ROI. you know, they get to talk to. And of course, when I got over to the treatment side of Shadowproof, I mean, I had my cell phone, so I could call my kids and call my family and call my sisters and my brother and let them know how I was doing. So.
But you're right. Disconnecting, going to a treatment center makes a world of difference, because you get to disconnect. You get to learn more yourself. You start seeing who you really are, you know, and you start sharing with other people that are within that treatment center. You know, you're truly not alone, because everybody's feeling the same thing.
Absolutely. And people said, well, why didn't you stay in Colorado? Well, sometimes it's better that you go out of state or another location, because you don't have those triggers, you know, all around you.
Right.
Sure. We lost his camera again, but yeah. So we're talking to Patrick Fitzgibbons from CJEvolution.com, a wonderful podcast. Everything we've been talking about, the Shatterproof program, and Patrick's being very open with his story. We so appreciate that, because this is what saves lives. So I've got, for those of you who are listening, it's CJEvolution.com. That is the website. You can find out about this program that he's talking about again. It's called Shatterproof, on his website. And let's talk a little bit about the podcast, because you use the podcast just like we use the podcast to talk about the tough stuff that's going on in our communities. Just tell everybody listening and watching a little bit about CJ Evolution.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sam. I mean, I started the show CJ Evolution about probably 7.5 years ago now. And, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing when I started it. And I remember driving around at work, listening to Rogan and other people and going, yeah, I want to try to do that. So, long story short, I talk about issues in law enforcement, use of force, and you know, some of the hot topic issues. But I've kind of pivoted in the last couple of years, in with all that's going on in law enforcement coming out of COVID, you know, first responders, you know, suffering a lot. I've kind of pivoted away from, you know, what I normally talked about, and I talk more about mental health. I'm not a clinician. I'm not a counselor. I don't claim to be. But I talk about my experiences, and I have guests on that can give some more insight to the listener about, flags, you know, warning signs, things like that, that can help the listener if they're struggling. And I thoroughly enjoy it, because not only is it therapeutic for me selfishly, but it's also very beneficial for the listener. So, yeah, it's just a wonderful program. I'm blessed. I just love putting things out there. I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to educate and kind of help first responders now.
Yeah, and that you said something so key. We're going to come back and touch on that in a second. We got to take a quick break and hear from our media sponsor. We'll be right back, everybody.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and our special guest, Patrick Fitzgibbons, with CJ Evolution's podcast as well. I just had to mute my mic before because my dogs were going nuts. I do apologize for that.
Well, people, I apologize that people would stop calling me. So
I had a chance.
It's our live show, people.
I do want to bring up a serious point, you know, which I'm kind of happy about. You know, Sam, when we were in Chicago, we were up to 125 suicides prior to the Thanksgiving holidays. And I'm happy to say we are still at 125 per the statistics right now, thank God. And 153 nationwide, and that includes corrections, firefighters, and paramedics, and EMS, and 911 emergency dispatchers. The numbers have not changed over the holidays. So I'm happy to announce that the numbers stayed the same over the holidays, which to me is a huge step forward, because we usually lose a few during either Thanksgiving or Christmas. So I'm happy to announce the numbers have not changed since last week. So let's keep up the good work.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you were saying on your podcast, you have guests on, and it's all about opening the door, right? It's all about throwing somebody an idea or a lifeline, if you will, because I'm sure you've heard when you're trying to help out another law enforcement officer or first responder, I have tried everything. We hear it all the time, and really setting the tone and being like, you know, take a step back, let's detach a little bit. Because when you say you've tried everything, we need to peel back all the layers of the onion to help first responders. Hey, we get it when you're talking, when that's what you're saying, because you feel like you're at the end of your rope, you're frustrated. And that's when you need to actually lean in and plug in more. So the guests you bring on, just like what we're doing here right now, can really, frankly, save a life, give an idea, get people to reach out for help. And like we started the show, we are these small pieces of this gigantic puzzle. And the more we share and the more we do podcasts and YouTube videos and everything like that, the more we're willing to put our stories out there. And that's what it's about. It's about having guests on that are willing to tell their stories. It's not about self-promotion. It's about saving lives at the end of the day.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's what John said, Sam, at the beginning. You know, he said, you know, call any of us, call you, call me. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I talk to people all the time and I'm like, call me. My kids are grown now. They're out of the house. I mean, it's just me now. So I hope if you're watching this and you're listening to us, I mean it. And I know John and Sam do too. If you are suffering and he needs to reach out, call us. That's right. The start. That's the start, you know, that first phone call. And, you know, just talking, you know, and just because, you know, first responders, I don't have to tell you. I mean, they're hard to break through.
But Patrick,
you know, they're hard to break through.
When you were talking about getting over that wall, when you first started opening up, I know Sam has that issue with opening up. I had that issue. Now we just vomit everything out.
Yeah.
We really do. And more stuff, more traumas keep coming out. I know I feel traumas each and every time we do a workshop. I find something new in my head, but I release it, and it's self-healing, and it really, really, it helps my insides. What gave you the strength, the courage to make that step over onto saying, hey, I'm going to vomit this out. I'm going to get it out, and I'm going to heal myself and heal others.
Well, I just, you know, I got to a point, John, when I was in treatment, like I said, I've never been in treatment before. I felt liberated. I felt just like this weight that was lifted off of me that I didn't have to hide anymore. I didn't have mm-hmm. to, I wasn't afraid. Sure, I just get freaked out about things now and then, but not to the point where I was so afraid of being judged, of somebody saying, and it was different for me because I was retired, but still, I mean, I retired pretty high up in the department. I was worried before I went to treatment, what are people gonna think? I had a show, I mentioned, you know, I still have my show. And I was really good at giving people advice, but I wasn't heeding my own advice.
That's all.
So now I had to face that. And, you know, I did. But it's hard to explain unless you've been through treatment, John. Once you release that, is it easy? Hell no. It's very difficult.
But this is where, like, my aha moment was on this show. We had a firefighter on this show. We were discussing his traumas, and he opened up about a sexual trauma, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sexually abused as a child, you know, that I held for 40 years, 45 years, never told a soul. When this firefighter, this amazing hero, described his trauma as a child, it opened me up. I said, man, I saw the bravery in you and it helped me open up. Though the times were hard to go through them, I came out that other side a much better person. So with you sharing your story, there's somebody out there right now listening to your story going, hey, if he can do it, guess what? I can do it.
Absolutely.
You know, it takes you to say, hey, here's my story. And like you said, that one person is going to hear your story and go, you know what? I can do the same.
Well, that's the beauty about Shatterproof. You know, I was among other first responders, no civilians. I'm not knocking civilians. It's just first responders. So when you're in a group and you're going around and you're hearing these horrible stories that each first responder in there has, but then it's closeness because we're all suffering. But you're among your peers. You're among first responders. And I'm not knocking civilians, but you have to treat first responders differently. Well, you have to treat them differently than you would with a civilian who's in treatment. Because we see trauma, I don't have to explain to you two, we see trauma every day. Every day. When the average person out there, I hate to use the word average, but Joe's civilian walking down the street, sure they had some bad crap happen to them, but they don't see it every day.
Right.
Like first responders do. And there's only so much you can fill in your cup before it starts bleeding, you know, spilling over, and it starts manifesting into depression, isolation, drinking, drugs, gambling, whatever, infidelity. You know, I mean, there's only so much you can take. We're not designed as humans to see trauma on a daily basis. And unfortunately, we do.
Now, as an Army veteran, right, and a first responder, right, do you feel that both those should be treated differently because of both different types of services? You know, veterans have different types of traumas than first responders. How do you correlate both of those? How do you, you know?
Well, we have veterans down at Shatterproof, you know, and they're part of our Shatterproof program. The bulk is first responders, but we do have veterans. You know, and they get the same treatment we do. You know, I mean, that's different PTSD. It's combat. But, you know, a good shooting to a police officer, that's combat.
It's combat.
You got somebody shooting at you.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, shooting is shooting, whether it's over in the Middle East or, you know, here. Yeah, different geographically. But, you know, it's PTS. It's PTSD. So we have veterans down there. We treat veterans all the time, and they get better.
That's fantastic. You know, we tend to joke about it in our workshops because there's a lot of veterans that, you know, you serve by putting on a different uniform, and the veterans that we've spoken to are like, oh, you know, we have it easy compared to you. And the first time that John and I heard that, it was like, whoa, time out. What? You know, let's pull up a chair. We got to discuss this. We got to unpackage this.
Yeah, yeah.
And how it was explained to us was like, well, look, you know, we prep for this mission. We do our training. We know
Absolutely.
Our target. We go, whatever our mission looks like, we go execute. Yeah, shit happens. And we come back. Sometimes we debrief right there. Sometimes it's a couple hours, but we're still together. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go on the next one, and some it could be the next day, but sometimes we have some downtime. You guys, oh my God, you go from one to the next,
yeah, absolutely,
to the next, and there is no downtime. And your downtime, you're not hanging out with your buds. You're going home to your spouse, and if you have kids, your kids.
Absolutely.
And so,
yeah, I mean,
you know, it's not to compare. It's just like that's the difference. So it's like we're like, no, you have it hard. Well, they're like, no, you have it hard. It's not comparing the trauma. It's we have the volume of trauma. It just looks a little different.
Right.
Yeah, trauma's trauma. Yeah, I mean, it's different, but trauma's trauma. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry,
Patrick, I was going to say, as a commander, when trauma's trauma, and I didn't want to cut you off on it, but as a commander in a PD, do you, thinking back then, the stresses that the officers had in your command, did you find yourself as you moved up the ranks hitting brick walls? What can you say to our commanders out there today that are stonewalling our first responders in the mental health field.
Well, I mean, listen to your troops. Unfortunately, I heard, John, before you started about Chicago and, you know, all the crap that they're dealing with, you know, with their command staff and it's politics. And unfortunately, politics is everywhere. But the reality is people are not flocking to law enforcement anymore in the droves that you and I remember and Sam remember they used to. So it's simple, but you have to listen to your troops. You know, you have to listen to them. Are you going to be able to accommodate everything that they want? Probably not. But this epidemic of mental health and addiction and officer suicides, it has to stop. And it starts with leadership.
Yep.
All right. And there's good leaders out there that are actually practicing what they preach. And then there's the leaders that give the lip service, who say all the right things, but then they fail to act. You know, it's more about self-preservation for them. And I get it. It's political. But we have got to do something more for our law enforcement. We have to, because
how do you, we got to take a quick break. On the flip side, I want to answer the question is, how do you get the message out to command staff, to whether it's at the sergeants and they go to the lieutenants and up? We're going to tackle that question is, how do we start really making a dent in the culture? We'll be right back with Patrick Fitzgibbons from CJ Evolution.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. And you keep switching the screen, Sam. It's crazy. I feel like I'm on multiple chairs here.
Make it bigger. Hey, there's a lot going on. You know, what can I say? Working aboard. I didn't learn that as a first responder. But in all seriousness, you know, It is a change of culture. It is a change of leadership. I will say, on one hand, it's good that we have some of the folks retiring that need to retire, so that the more progressive officers can come up. But that being said, we also we're seeing the reverse where you have the chief retire, but those that are coming up after him, it's the same suck it up, buttercup mentality. How do we really, like, put the foot in the door when they go to slam it, stop talking to me about mental health, and say, no, you need to listen?
Well, the numbers don't lie, Sam. I mean, look at the numbers. Look how many people are leaving. I know Chicago PD, I don't know what their full strength is, but I know they're not a lot. I was just out in LA a month ago. They're down 1,000 cops. You know, I mean, the numbers don't lie. Look at the suicides. John quoted them at the beginning of the show. I mean, how many, the numbers don't lie. So you it's like that 800-pound gorilla in the room. You could ignore it for so long, it's still there.
Right.
Right. You know, right. So what we see is exactly what we're seeing in Chicago. The folks that have the heart for service, that are at this point trying to stick it out because those numbers are so low, we're talking overtime, in some cases forced overtime. Yeah. There is only so much bandwidth a human being has as a working as a first responder, seeing the trauma every single day, when we know what the end result is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like a perfect storm that we're dealing with. You know, I was lucky when I was a cop that we didn't, social media was there, but it wasn't as prevalent now. So now cops are getting slammed on social media. They're getting slammed by elected officials, you know, where I didn't have to deal with that when I was a young cop. I mean, we've always been under a critical eye, which we should be. So, and now they're dealing with, you know, coming out of COVID, like you said, mandatory overtime. So it's the perfect time. Again, this goes back to open your eyes, leadership. Open your eyes. It's not like it's hidden. It's out there. And to be fair, there are good departments out there.
Oh, yeah.
That are taking care of their troops. And then there's departments that are the lip service. But it's a culture. You both know that. Every department, it's all law enforcement, has a different culture. You know, different dynamics. Some departments are good. Some departments are not so good, but it's really a matter of, okay, here's the information. There is resources out there. A lot of it is lack of knowledge too, Sam. Some commanders, some command staff don't know the resources out there.
Right.
You know, they don't know. So, okay, we have this thing called the internet. Yeah. Get on, you know, start looking at stuff, talk to people, network.
But see,
because your troops deserve it.
This is where the failure is too, Patrick. You just said some command staff don't know the resources out there. But I bet you know they know the top quality guns, vests, armored vehicles.
Oh, absolutely. And those are important
stuff they know.
And that's important. That's important. But the reality is we have a crisis right now in our country. It's been brewing for a long time. Now we're in the red zone right now where officers are killing themselves. One is too much for me. One is too much. You know, and I'm not just talking about active duty. I'm talking about retirees, you know, and now we're at that level. But a lot of it, too, is the culture within an organization, the suck it up buttercup attitude that some command staff have. Well, it wasn't like that when it was effed up then. Because now it's changed. You need to go along with the change, and your officers deserve to get the help they need.
As a commander, tell me if you heard me come up to you and say, hey, chief or captain, listen, we're losing three times as many cops to suicide. Then three times, 125 cops and then we got 53 killed by gunfire, right? If we're all looking almost three times as much, or two times as much, getting killed by their own arm, wouldn't you turn around and go, whoa, we have a problem?
Let's table the Bearcat purchase for SWAT that we need. Let's allocate some resources. That should be our top priority. Look, the most important asset in any organization is your human capital.
Correct.
I mean, if you don't have people out on the street, now you're always going to have issues with discipline. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about, you know, officers, not just cops, but dispatchers, corrections, EMTs, fire, that are suffering. So we need to make them a priority, you know.
No doubt. Yeah. And for everybody that's listening or watching, Patrick, it's phenomenal. Your podcast, again, it's cjevolution.com. You can find it there, and a lot of other stuff like the Shadowproof program that we've been talking about on his website. These are the kind of things that he tackles. These are conversations that he has. It is about human capital. It is about leadership. There isn't a chief out there. Patrick, I'm sure you've had these conversations. It's like, hey, chief, do you want a department that functions really well? Or do you want you want to be ranked last? And of course, what chief is going to say, oh, I want to be ranked last? Well, let's face it. The way that between the politicians, defund the police, you name it, all departments are being left last. There are very few that are doing the right things by their men and women, making sure that they have a safety net, making sure they have a mental health network, making sure they have at least one person on staff that they can talk to. The majority
absolutely
do not, and we have to change this. These topics and more, cjevolution.com, because we're one big family and we got to change things.
You get educated,
and we will. You get educated
on your website. I got so educated by just going on your website, just reading, and I printed everything out, and I've learned so much just by educating myself. And that's what people have to do: go onto the website, get educated, learn a little bit.
Yeah, if you're not getting it at work, if you're not getting in the department, get on the website, grab the resources. They are out there. It used to be what? We're going to age ourselves. Let your fingers do the walking, right? You said we have the internet now. It's out there. Let us be your safety net.
Okay? Absolutely. And I said before, if people want to talk to me, you know, I'm a national liaison for FHE Health and Shatterproof, reach out to me.
You can reach out to me. Patrick, as usual, you know, these shows fly by. You have been a wealth of information. Thank you so much for sharing your story, being
absolutely
open.
Anytime.
And please, cjevolution.com. It's been up on the screen for a long time for a reason. And for those that are listening on your favorite podcast app, cjevolution.com. Check out what Patrick is doing there, the Shatterproof program. You are not alone. We absolutely hear you. Patrick, we'll be talking soon. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. God bless you and God bless the listeners. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Man, you know, what a wealth of information. And I just love to see when we start bringing in guests from across the country and around, you know, from different states, and you hear their stories, you really got to look at it and go, you know what? We're not alone. It's, you know, we're this small aspect here in Texas. Well, big aspect in Texas, but we're this small thing in Texas. And we're going, well, nobody else feels like that. Well, yeah, Colorado feels like that. Arizona feels like that. Florida feels like that. New Mexico feels like that. All these people are feeling the same way. And you know what? It doesn't take much. We brought this up in Chicago. All it takes is that little first step. And we'll guide you through that first step to start healing yourself. And you can't be selfish when it comes to your own healing.
You have to be selfish. So the resources and the tools, think of this as a rollout. We've all been doing this, you know, Patrick, 7 years. We've been doing this for a bunch of years. They're out there. We're out there. We are here for you. Connect with us if you can't connect with your department or inside your community, because we got the ability to connect the dots so that you are okay on the flip side and you're able to serve at the level that you know that your heart has brought you to that. And with that, John, you know, we are bringing people together the 22nd of every month. It was no different. We were in Chicago doing it there. Walk the Bridge. You can go to walkthebridge.org the 22nd of every month. Find out where we are, where you can participate and walk a bridge, wherever it is in your city. We're expanding. It's actually worldwide now. So walkthebridge.org. You're not alone in your struggles, and it's a time and a place for everybody to come together and remember those that we've lost, but also talk about what's going on and heal. It's a great place to heal. Abadgeofhonor.com is where we are, where the podcast is. And hey, we're on TV. We got Rumble TV. We're expanding because we never know if we're going to say something, you know, that might take us down. It's happened before.
Yep.
So we don't want that to happen anymore. So, hey, check us out, Rumble TV / A Badge of Honor. Huge shout out to OBBM Network for rolling us out on so many different platforms. You can listen throughout the week to this podcast episode and all of our previous ones on your favorite podcast app by just going to your favorite podcast app and searching up A Badge of Honor podcast. Don't forget that podcast at the end. Subscribe, support. You can donate through our website. And when you do that, just so people know, when you make a donation to A Badge of Honor, you are providing a scholarship opportunity for first responders to attend our programs at no cost. Because not everybody and every department can afford it. We've got an upcoming workshop in Lufkin, Texas. Thank you, DETCOG. That's Deep East Texas Council of Government. They are sponsoring every first responder that wants to attend. They are sponsoring. Get on our website, click the events tab. You will see who you need to contact. Get your name on the list. Come out, no cost. Thank you, DETCOG, right there.
I want to thank Judy Lamp for I want to thank Judy Lamp, who is one of our listeners. She's just on right now, and she just reminded me about Amazon Smiles. It's the Christmas holidays. Everybody's ordering through Amazon. Go to Amazon Smiles. Doesn't cost you anything, but they donate to A Badge of Honor. So if you go to Badge of Honor, go to Amazon Smiles, order everything. It doesn't change the price of the purchase, but they donate some of that purchase to A Badge of Honor. So go to Amazon Smiles, click on A Badge of Honor, and make your purchase there. It's only a one click can put another first responder through a workshop. And I want to thank Kerry Booth, who's out there. She's another one who suffers from post-traumatic stress through being a paramedic, being a first responder out on Long Island. So I want to thank Kerry Booth for joining in. Thank you, Judy Lamp. These are people that are out there also supporting our first responders each and every day in every capacity they can. So I want to thank you and God bless you. Thank you, Tina, for showing up and being supportive as always through your platforms and through your resources. It's been fantastic for us as well. So, Sam, you know, we have workshops coming up. 2023 is going to be a great year for us. We're going to really expand into more family workshops, more workshops around Texas, and hopefully and further with Brotherhood for the Fallen, who brought us out. They loved us so much, they may want to bring us out to Boston. They may want to bring us out to some other networks that they have, some other chapters that they have. So Brotherhood for the Fallen, thank you on behalf of Badge of Honor for bringing us out there and letting us share our experience with them as well. Thank you, Rick. Another great podcast is Served Twice by Choice, which me and Sam are going to be on this week. An amazing podcast, you know, depicting our American heroes and our patriots throughout the country. So check out Served Twice by Choice as well.
And until next week, everybody, thank you again for joining us. And go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You know you want to. Yeah. Have a great night, John. Thank you, everybody. Good night, Sam. See you next week.
Take care.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.